Now let us examine Psalm 15 with a little more detail here. Especially for the moment here, we're going to stick in this part, in thy tabernacle, verse 1. Might help us to better understand what is scripturally meant by thy, meaning God's tabernacle. Okay, so the idea here, scripturally, is God intends to meet with his people in one specific place, a tabernacle sanctified by his glory. Exodus 29, verse 43, Moses writes, and he's quoting God here, "And there I will meet with the children of Israel, and the tabernacle shall be sanctified by my glory." All right? The idea that coexists with this is the idea that God's enlisting the willing personal offering of his people towards the construction of this tabernacle, okay? He's asking them from the spoils that he gave them in their exodus from Egypt, okay? Egypt gave them plenty of gold and silver and brass and stuff that they could have gone on and used for themselves. God is enlisting the willing personal offering of these spoils towards the building of the construction of this. Okay, so Exodus 25:2 speaks, "Speak unto the children of Israel that they may bring me an offering. Of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart, ye shall take my offering." Okay, now coexisting with those two ideas now, there's a third idea here where God gives particular men both the blueprints for the construction of this and the spiritual wisdom to craft the tabernacle to his exact specifications. Exodus 25:9 says, "According to all that I shew thee," all that I've shown thee, in other words, King James language there, "all that I shew thee, after the pattern of the tabernacle, and the pattern of all the instruments thereof, even so shall ye make it." And he continues in Exodus 31, verses 2 through 6. He says, "See, I have called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, the tribe of Judah. And I have filled him with the Spirit of God, in wisdom and in understanding and in knowledge and in all manner of workmanship, to devise cunning works, to work in gold and in silver and in brass, and in cutting of stones to set them, and in carving of timber, to work all manner of craftsmanship. And I, behold, have given with him Aholiab, the son of Ahishamash, of the tribe of Dan. And in the hearts of all that are wise-hearted, I have put wisdom, that they may make all that I command thee." Now, along with these three ideas now, a fourth component, the idea presented in 25:8, Exodus 25:8, that God is doing this for the purpose of dwelling here with us in some tangible form, right? Exodus 25:8, Moses writes, "And let them make me a sanctuary, that I may dwell among them." So now the question is, why would God go through all this, designing and enlisting and empowering and constructing and the operation of and the upkeep of this physical tent? Well, you know, if this physical tent was the full extent of his plan, if this is all to it, why would God put man to this? Why would he put himself to this unless there was something more? The answer is ultimately he is seeking a place in the hearts of men and women worthy of his most holy abiding presence, an acceptable place that is sanctified and consecrated by us, just as he likewise has done for us. You see, it's a reciprocal thing. He sanctifies the design and the free will offering and everything of this. And we sanctify a place in our hearts for his abiding presence. Here's the problem with this that I can see already. Man has a nearly inescapable tendency towards focusing on the many articles of worship rather than the true object of worship, which should be God's abiding presence over it. In other words, we worship the tabernacle, or we worship the church, or the denomination, or the rituals thereof, or the traditions thereof, or the culture, rather than the actual, quote, abiding presence of the Most Holy God. Add to this the complication that man does not tend to sanctify or consecrate anything in his heart. More times than not, it's exactly opposite. Paul writes to Titus in chapter 1, verse 15. He says to Titus, "But unto them that are defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure." I mean, how much in our heart of hearts do we actually sanctify or consecrate anything, let alone a place in God's heart or in our heart for God's presence and abiding? Now let's look at this word as it's used in the Psalms, tabernacle. Okay, that's Strong's H-168. It's ohel or ohel. It means a tent, a covering, a dwelling place, a tabernacle, a tent. And we look at how the psalmists take this word, ohel, and how they use it, the context in which they use it, okay? One of those uses is that they intend for this to mean a safe place in this life that God hides us. Psalms 27:5, the psalmist there writes, talking about in a time of trouble, "In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me or conceal me." Now, everyone wants to be made to feel safe. We go about securing that feeling whatever ways we can. Few of us ever brave to go to that consecrated place in our hearts where the Most Holy God is present to find our safety in Him. Another use of this word by the psalmist gives us the sense that this is a place in this life to offer joy and singing and praises. Psalms 27:6 now, a verse after our first verse, says, "Therefore," meaning in this time of trouble and meaning in this time where God's lifted our heads above our enemies, okay? "Therefore, I will offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord." Joy, happiness, and the pursuit of these things, which we'd give most every effort, who would ever know that the true joy comes from or comes in the sacrifice of ourselves? Few ever brave to go to that consecrated place in our hearts, where the presence of the Most Holy God becomes our joy, where our cup runneth over. Another use of this word by the psalmist indicates to us the idea of leading, that we're led into by truth and by light. Psalms 43:3 says, "Oh, send out thy light and thy truth. Let them lead me. Let them bring me unto thy holy hill and to thy tabernacles." Often we are led by fear. Often we're led by the events of the day, the consequences of our previous actions, by what other people say or what others' so-called truth and light amounts to. Rarely do we brave to walk towards that consecrated place in our hearts, where a Most Holy God shines forth up ahead of us there, see it? And guides us by His greater truth. Another use of this word made by the psalmists, Psalms 132:7, gives us a sense that this tabernacle is a place of congregational worship. Psalms 30, 132:7 says, "We will go into his tabernacles. We will worship at his footstools." A we is a place that we seldomly choose to go when it comes to our faith and religion. We tend to worship God in our own smaller prayer closets, even while we're sitting in the assembly of thousands. You know, there in the pews, locked in our own little small prayer closet, our own little own worship, world of worship. Our focus is drawn to within instead of our focus being drawn without to all that God is doing elsewhere around us. Few ever brave to open up that consecrated place in our hearts where the presence of a most holy God is seeking for us to allow his other children into this circle of worship. The place of we, the place of congregational worship. Another use, used by the psalmist here, is that this tabernacle is also referring to the holiest of all places, of all the tents of the Most High. Psalms 46:4 says, "This is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High." Now that city of God in the Old Testament refers to Jerusalem. In the New Testament, when it's mentioned, it's talking about the heavenly Jerusalem, like in Hebrews 12:22. That holy place is a sacred or eminent, where his presence is eminent, most eminent of all the tabernacles of the Most High. A most holy God deserves a most sanctified and consecrated place in our hearts to dwell. So hopefully we have a better sense of where the psalmists were at with this concept of tabernacle. The emphasis has to be on the sanctification or consecration given to it by our heart. It's not just a landmark. Not just a tradition or religion or temple of any other god. It's not just an individual thing, whatever one imagines or is comfortable with, whatever one wants to make out of it. It involves a nation of people God himself has declared and shown to be his chosen. It is not that man is building this build it and God will come. It's not him building and hoping that God will someday come. God has already proven himself to them. Look here in Deuteronomy 4, starting at verse 31 through 39, says, "For the Lord thy God is a merciful God. He will not forsake thee, neither destroy thee, nor forget the covenant of thy fathers, which he sware unto them. For ask now of the days that are past, which were before thee, since the day that God created man on earth, and ask from the one side of heaven to the other, whether there has been any such thing as this great thing, or hath been heard anything like it. Did ever people hear the voice of God speaking out of the midst of the fire, as thou hast heard, and live? Or hath God essayed to go and take him a nation from the midst of other nations by temptations, by signs, by wonders, and by war, and by a mighty hand, and by a stretched out arm, and by a great terrors, according to all that the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? Unto thee it was showed, that thou mightest know that the Lord, he is God, there is none else beside him. Out of heaven he made thee to hear his voice, that he might instruct thee, and upon the earth he showed thee his great fire, and thou heardest the words out of the midst of the fire. And because he loved thy fathers, therefore he chose their seed after them, and brought thee out in his sight with a mighty power out of Egypt, to drive out nations before thee, greater and mightier than thou art, to bring thee in, to give thee their land for an inheritance, as it is this day. Now for this day, know therefore this day, and consider it in thine heart, that the Lord, he is God in heaven above, and above the earth beneath. There is none else. Along with these initial understandings of tabernacle, there's a very important pictures or symbolisms for us to consider. The place in our hearts, sanctified and consecrated to receive his abiding presence, needs to be central in our lives, as it was physically that tabernacle there in the wilderness of Israel. Remember, the tabernacle was built there in the center of the camps of the other tribes of Israel. It was central to their lives, and it was supposed to be central. It is what guided them by day with a fire, with a cloud. It's what lit their path at night, being a fire above them. That presence and the tabernacle for which that presence was to indwell. The place in our hearts, sanctified and consecrated to receive his holy abiding presence, needs to be partitioned off from the business and the hustle and bustle of the rest of the camp, as it was physically in the wilderness camp there at Israel. Right? There was a curtain wall around it. It was separated. It was segregated. It was partitioned. Okay, this is all well and fine, your normal daily affairs and everything. But central to all this and partitioned from all this is a spot in our hearts, holy and consecrated, right? Sanctified. That was something to be something else, something different, something much holier, something much more devout than all of the rest of this madness during the day. The place in our hearts, sanctified and consecrated to receive his abiding presence, needs the candle of truth to light its way, the showbread of the 12 tribes held and lifted by the divinely plated table of Christ, the fragrant incense of all of our prayers, while service to God is rendered in this first sanctuary, as it was physically in the wilderness of Israel. You see how it shadows and types. It's patterns of things to come, like we were talking about, right? It's not just a temple. It's a picture of our hearts, that place in our hearts we're supposed to set aside for God. That place in our hearts, sanctified and consecrated to receive his abiding presence, needs Christ, our high priest, to make full and eternal atonement for his people, to rent the veil into the holiest of holies, the veil into that second sanctuary, as it was physically in the camp there in the wilderness of Israel. These earthly symbolisms are heavenly pictures, patterns of what it means to sanctify, to consecrate, guides of God's abiding presence in our hearts. Follow the patterns to their spiritual conclusions, and one will have sanctified and consecrated and a substantial place in their hearts for God's abiding presence to dwell. We could go a whole lot further into the details of this tabernacle symbolism, but here anyway, we've got a quick glance at that first layer of it. I hope this will inspire you to look even deeper into the symbolism of tabernacle and what it's supposed to mean to us today.